I may be the only person left in America who is not running for the Republican nomination for president.
That's about it. I've been joking in my speeches that it's 55 and counting as the number of people running for president. But, you know, I think it's a good sign for Republicans that we have so many people wanting to run, because I think it shows that we think we have a lot of people to offer. And really, you're seeing a vibrant group of people running.
Well, there's no doubt there are a bunch of great, nominees out there, potential nominees. But let's look at the basics. Let's get down to ground level here. We're hearing a lot of grandstanding about give the money back to the people, take the money from the rich, give it back to the poor, blah, blah, blah. We've heard that before. But you're the only candidate that I'm hearing who is quoting the Constitution.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, I think it was yesterday that we celebrated, you know, the birthday of Magna Carta.
Yeah.
And this was one of the most important things as far as sort of restraining the power of the king. And then when we got to our country, we didn't give up on all that. It was a continued tradition of trying to restrain the king. He wouldn't listen. But then when we wrote the Constitution, we tried to, and the goal was to basically limit government, not the people. And that's still a struggle. I think it's a struggle for every generation not to let too much power accumulate in the hands of those who are in government.
And this has spilled over into the Supreme Court decision to allow, you know, very, very wealthy people to donate as much as they want to political campaigns without any accountability to the rest of us. We're just seeing this world where it appears even in the president's trade agreement that we're working on now, this fast track thing. I mean, many of us remember the last big trade agreement, which was NAFTA, and that was a disaster.
Well, one of the things that I've said, and I ended up opposing giving president this authority, one of the things I've said over and over again is that one of the worst things that's happened to our government over the last 100 years or so, and really has accelerated lately, is we've let too much power gravitate to one person. And that could be Republican or Democrat, but we have too much power in the presidency. There are thousands and thousands, in fact, millions of bureaucrats that basically create and write more law than your congressman does often. And so with this specific bill, it gives the president the authority to send legislation to us that cannot be amended and cannot be filibustered. So it's an extraordinary type of legislation in that it sends legislation through that doesn't go through the normal processes, doesn't require the normal cooperation or compromise. And so I thought it was too much power for the president, and that's why I voted no.
So you're a candidate for the presidency who's trying to convince people that you want to give up power.
Yeah, and I think that could be extraordinary in some ways. I like the Lincoln quote where he says, any man can stand adversity, but if you want to test a man, give him power. And the test is whether the power goes to their head or whether they try to accumulate more. And I think really what we need to get is leaders who want to preserve the power with both the people and the Congress and the local states, and not try to grab up too much power in Washington. The other reason to do this is just that we have this enormous, massive debt that I think is a burden and weighing us down as an economy. And part of that's because the normal checks and balances have been upset and too much power has gravitated to the presidency.
It's interesting that you mention Abraham Lincoln. This is the anniversary of his House Divided speech. Do we have a House Divided?
Yeah, it's not quite to the same degree. I mean, we're not fighting each other. We don't have a civil war going on. But I think there is still and are still divisions, you know, in our country that need to be overcome. And I think part of overcoming them is acknowledging that we aren't going to agree on everything. And so what I've been trying to encourage people in Washington to do is to strike smaller bargains, try to have bills that are more narrow, focused on individual issues. Because if I sit down with a group of Democrats, I can find two or three issues, at least out of 10, that I agree on. Why wouldn't we just try to pass the two or three we agree on, rather than trying to make some deal on all 10 issues that makes it very hard for us to come to an agreement, and as a consequence, nothing gets done? And I think really that's part of the reason we have gridlock, is that we try to agree on too much. If we would narrow the focus of the bills, I think we could have much more agreement and get much more work done up here.
You know that I am a social liberal, and there are a lot of us out there. Still, I support you because you're the only fiscal conservative who makes sense to me, at least. I don't know if that's true of everybody, but I certainly do. How are you going to sell yourself to the liberal side of America as a viable candidate for president?
Well, I think part of it is that, for the most part, government doesn't need to be involved in a lot of things. And at the federal level, really, the government should be providing for national defense, should be keeping law and order and protecting our borders. But there isn't something that government needs to be involved at every level in. And so a lot of these things can be left to the states and the people. Mm-hmm. And then what will happen is that you'd have some differences between states. You'd have some states a little more liberal than others. You'd have had some states that are more conservative than others, and people would, law gradually changes depending on the people.
So you expect people to simply gravitate to the state that supports their views and opinions?
Well, it's always been that way to a certain extent. It's which happens first? Does the state law reflect the people, or do the people go there because they like that state law? But the bottom line is, the smaller the division of government, the better chance you have of finding a government that you like. So, for example, if you break it all the way down to like a city-state kind of arrangement, that if you could actually move to a city that actually has laws that are more to your liking, that's even better. So if you allow decentralization of government, there is more choice, and basically people can have more freedom that way.
And then we evolve into a social experiment as to whose ideas actually work.
Yeah, and to a certain extent, most ideas are voluntarily accepted, and there doesn't have to, for the most part, be coercion involved.
Yeah.
And I think you'll find that over time, that the more freedom, the better, and that there's a lot of things that can be worked out. You have to have the state involved for law enforcement. You have to keep people from harming each other and aggressing against each other. But there's a lot of other decisions we make in our life about morality and individual decisions that are things that the state doesn't have to be involved in.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, I think that's one of the most reasonable comments I've heard. We now have the news that a drone strike has taken out the second-in-command of Al-Qaeda. I know that you've weighed in against drones. Where stand you on this?
Well, the thing is, it's not quite as simple as that I've weighed in against drones. The technology I'm not opposed to. It's the use of any kind of weapon, really, against an American citizen who's not in the middle of a war that's just sort of located somewhere. The point I made was, I did not want the ability to assassinate an American citizen to occur without due process.
Yeah.
So I think that it really wasn't just about the drones so much. Drones are just a military weapon. I'm not opposed to drones necessarily. I'm opposed to using them indiscriminately and without some sort of due process for American citizens, particularly ones not involved in combat.
You took the Senate floor once again for 11 hours. And once again, anybody who paid attention to your filibuster saw and received a PhD-level course on the U.S. Constitution. That was absolutely brilliant, sir. If anybody paid attention to what you were saying, it was a wonderful, wonderful experience. Did anybody pay attention?
You know, some did, and some are just partisans, and they just want to, make everything about a fight or a battle over superficial things. But, the thing is that what motivates me is that there was a court case in the 1920s where Justice Brandeis was in the dissent, and he said that the right to be left alone is the most cherished of rights. Huh. And people still don't quite get this. Some will argue, and even some on the conservative side will argue, there is no right to privacy because it's not written in the Constitution. But what's important is the Constitution didn't list all of your rights. The Constitution listed all of the powers that you gave to government, but basically the Ninth Amendment says those rights not listed are not to be disparaged,
right?
Meaning that you have a lot of rights. Your rights come to you naturally, and there is no complete listing of them, but you do have a right to privacy. And the debate we haven't figured out and haven't had at the Supreme Court yet is whether or not you have a right or an expectation of privacy in your virtual records. When the Constitution was written, there was only paper records, and they were in your house. Now we keep much more personal items and records in the cloud of the internet, and that's the real question I'm asking is, do we have an expectation of privacy? And my answer is absolutely yes, that the government should not have free access to your digital or virtual information.
Senator Rand Paul joining us on the WVJS hotline this morning live, and I actually don't know where you are this morning. So are you in Washington?
I am in Washington. I'll be voting this morning at about 11:30, and so I'm back and forth. In fact, I'll be back in Kentucky this weekend for Father's Day. I'll be doing some surgery over in Paducah for charity with Dr. Barbara Bowers, and then I'll come back, and there's going to be an induction ceremony for a federal judge, a friend of mine in Bowling Green, Greg Stivers.
Not everybody knows that you are a licensed ophthalmologist, and that every year you spend time giving free eye surgeries to folks who are in need here in Kentucky, and I congratulate you and thank you for that. When you look out the front mirror, out the windshield, at what's ahead of you over the next couple of weeks, what's popping up that will be of real importance to folks here in Western Kentucky?
One of the things that's going to be coming up is the highway bill, and the highway bill right now, or the trust fund, is $15 billion short every year, and like everything else, there's not much trust in the trust fund, and so I've come up with a proposal that I think could supply more money for roads by actually lowering a tax. There's $2 trillion in American profit that's overseas, and it won't come home because we charge it a tax of 35% to come home after they pay the taxes in wherever they're located. So what I've proposed is to lower this tax to 6.5% and then take the money that comes home, the tax money, and put it into the road fund. We did this once in 2005, and it brought home a significant amount of money, and I think it'll do it again. But that's an amendment I have for the highway bill when we get to it, hopefully this summer sometime.
Congratulations on your successes to this point, and strength to your arm as you represent those of us here in Western Kentucky, and as you pursue the top executive position in the world. And thanks again, Senator Paul, for spending a little time with us here on the Breakfast Bunch. I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Brian. We'll do it again soon.